And this is Jim from Safety Words. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to north, it's Jim Polzel with Safety Words. For Thursday, July 25th, 2024. How's everybody doing out there? Tell you what, I got a lot of comments on last night's show. So, they went along these lines. We should not be applying human and organizational performance stuff to the whole situation with the Secret Service. Well, I tell you what. I disagree with this. We need to get to the bottom of things and then figure out what to do with that. I have a feeling that what happened to President Trump a couple of weeks ago, not going to happen again. I'm sure that they are at the top of their game and they're very focused on what they're going to do. Number one. Number two, we want to get more information. We do not have context. Hopefully by the end of a couple of weeks, hopefully it's not going to go on for too long, we'll be able to go in here and figure out what happened. And now if someone has to be let go, they need to be let go. I don't know, but that's not our first thing. Second question I got on the program from yesterday was, whatever happened to the employee that wrongfully fired there? Well, he went on a downward spiral and died shortly thereafter, about a year and a half afterward. All right, with that. Just never recovered from the whole thing. And that's what happened. And that is why we do not go out there and automatically fire someone. We automatically, well, we're going to make them play, and we're going to go out there and blame, shame, and retrain them. We don't do that. Now, we're going to be discussing at length today, and this is probably for your Safety FM listeners. We'll be going over the hour here. This is focused to anybody who has to deal with industrial painters. As you know, and I, as you may know, might not know, whatever, I worked with industrial painters for the majority of my career as clients, right, and as a direct employee, direct hire. So I know a lot about painting. I'm not going to be one out there saying I'm the expert. Not an expert. Painting, and now you're going to say, well, what's so difficult? You go out there, you mix the paint, you put it on the wall. What's the big deal? A lot more to it than that. So before I start with the whole thing, I want to go over, and I'm going to do a share screen here. I'm on the other platform here. I'm not good enough with the one I was using yesterday, but we're getting there. We're getting there. I wanted to talk about this. And these are the proposed penalties from OSHA. All right, so we always talk about this. I have a video I'm working on that explains this, a little snippet type of thing, like you heard on the general duty clause just now. Right, that's I'm using that as a cut-in, so no, letting things no, because when I hit live, depending on what platform I'm on, there's a little bit of a delay, so I want to put something in there. With that. So here, and I'm going to be small for this one, right? I'm all the way down at the bottom, so those people actually looking on a computer screen will be able to see this a little bit better. So these are the penalties here. So for willful violation, right, you're looking at $161,323, right, maximum, and a minimum of $11,524. Repeat violation, not to exceed $161,323. That's $161,323. Serious violation is $16,131. Other than serious violation is $16,131. Failure to correct for $16,131 per day, but they usually put a limit on there, and there is a penalty for not posting this. We also have de minimis penalties, which are usually zero. With that, no, they get lumped in together, and under OSHA's current policy, as I understand it, now they're able to fine a lot more on a per-instance basis. That was one of the changes that the Biden administration had put into place when they came in here. So it could get really expensive really quick, as we see if you're a regular listener or viewer out here. It could get expensive out there. Now I go through. Now, what annoys me a little bit is that the Department of Labor, OSHA's side, they're a little bit behind on news releases. Department of Labor gives press releases really regularly, every day. Something comes out. A lot of them have to do with OSHA and safety, so a lot of them don't. And if I find it interesting, I normally will discuss them. Now, back in, and I'm going to say this again. Everyone is innocent until they're proven guilty. And a lot of these citations are proposed that we talk about here. Remember, you have 15 days to contest a citation, then a proposed citation, then it becomes permanent. But a lot of these, once you have an informal settlement, you may have some litigation, you may have any number of situations that may lead to these things being reduced. And a couple of cases I know where they were increased because you're negotiating, hey, you knock that one off, and we're willing to pay more for this one. Or, no, they get vacated, litigated, settled, all different types of stuff. So these are all the proposed. The second thing is this. I try to avoid naming companies unless it's something so obvious that I have to name companies and name names. So I'm going to be referring to this company as a contractor. Now, I'm reading off of the dailyvoice.com and for Ocean County, New Jersey. This is some of the context for the what we're talking about today. So let me say this again. If you are an industrial painting contractor, this is a show for you. If you know of an industrial painting contractor, send this on over to him or her, right? If you are doing training for an industrial contractor, Got an industrial painting contractor. This is it. If you're and this is the program for you. If you're managing them, this is also the program for this. Now, this usually happens with one of my clients. I'll just share the story briefly. I work for a general contractor, and the general contractor, also known as a controlling contractor for OSHA purposes, and the contractor, they hire painters, right? It can be a painter for the building they're working on or whatever they're constructing, or for a tank. Two significantly different activities. Now, what I want to point out is this. Most people do not know how to do safety when it comes to painting contractors. As one of my former colleagues said, this is actually a very complex thing, painting, especially if you're involved in water towers, oil tanks, oil refineries, pipelines, things of that nature. I had lunch a number of years ago with some environmental group and the president and vice president, and the group said, well, we didn't realize there was so much to painting with this stuff, because all of the painting coatings have to be warrantied if you're going to be with a tank or anything like that. I mean, not a tank like the Army tank, but like an above-ground storage tank, right? Because this is a protective coating on here, so it doesn't rust. It's regulated by NACE, which is the international organization that regulates coatings and corrosion and things of that nature. And there are three levels of certifications for them. It's a hard certification to get. So the first one, NACE 1, is what they call. That's like you can paint, you're a foreman, that sort of thing. Then NACE 2, you start to get into some of the inspections type stuff. NACE 3, you're supposed to know everything about painting. And I'll add this, it's all in the surface prep, right? The big thing. Now, so it's a very complicated activity. And what happens is I had one contractor that came out to paint a tank, above ground storage tank. And I said, okay, let me see you're going to be abrasive blasting. We're not allowed to call it sandblasting, abrasive blasting. Now, can I see your equipment, your SDSs, was your air sampling stuff? Air supply stuff. Was that calibrated? Was this done? I went through the whole list, and it's all going to be here what we're going to go on with this one contractor out of South Jersey. And they said, you know what? We never had anybody ever say this to us. And I said to the guy, you know what? I believe you. I absolutely 100% believe that is a true statement, what you said. However, I worked with industrial painting contractors most of my career. I know how to paint. I know what you're supposed to have. And then we go through the whole thing where I show him the regulation. I show him the math. I show him air sampling results. And he says, well, we don't have to do, and you're going to find out all of this stuff here. This all was all the same in the up-and-coming press release we're going to talk about. And he said, well, we were working so-and-so, they didn't make us do it. I said, well, why didn't that's not my business. I said, you're not working at that facility. You are working here. We're doing what we're supposed to do. Well, I never heard of anything like this. So I'm going to tell my boss. I said, what's your boss's number? And I'll give your boss a call. The boss was in middle America, one time zone back. And she answers the phone at 7:30 in the morning and said, look, Jim Polzel, JCB Technical, we're working at this project with your guy, blah, 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 blah. He's saying that he doesn't have to use abrasive blasting helmets. He doesn't have to have a supplied air respirator. He doesn't have to do air monitoring. He doesn't have to do this, blah, 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 the whole list. Right? Very similar to what you're going to be hearing. And she said, you know what, I can't really talk to that, Jim. I have a corporate safety officer who is employed by us to handle this. I need to see if I can conference that person in. I said, I know it's like 6:45 in the morning where you are, but this is an issue. I'm not letting your person work until we have a discussion. They didn't even show up with their job hazard analysis, and he says it's not required anywhere else, therefore it shouldn't have to be required here. None of this other stuff I ask for says it's not required at such and such place, therefore I don't know what I'm doing, and I blah, 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 blah. I said, I had him on speaker. This is what I'm being told. I said, I'm going to tell you, you're not working unless this stuff happens. I'm sorry. And by the way, you were given the corporate safety plan before you came to the job. You had to issue your corporate safety plan for us to review. You had to issue JHAs. We're requiring JHAs every day here. And no job hazard analysis. Got to have it. We were being heavily scrutinized here. Okay, well, and I said, plus, the last crew that you sent over here from your company that built the above-ground storage tank had everything in place. I said, it was great. No, usually the tankies, what they call constructing these tanks, usually they're the ones you got to worry about. Your company came here, and they told me what they were going to do. They said, these are our stuff, and this is what we're going to do. And everything was 110% of what it was supposed to. And I didn't have a problem. Now this crew is like totally the opposite, fainting crew. She got the other person on by the time we had this conversation. And the corporate safety director says, hey, Jim, is it? I said, yeah. I said, look, I explained to her the issue, everything that's going on. And I said, what's going on here? And she says, well, we do require abrasive blasting hoods in supplied air when we're abrasive blasting. I said, okay. I said, do you have air sampling results? She says, hang on a minute. Let me get them. Usually that's a stalling thing. And I had my air sampling results, right, from my experience. No, I had written them down. I knew what they were. And our air sampling results are this, this, and this. I said to the guy, look, I told you what they were going to be before I even spoke to this person. I said, so you're in supplied air. And I said, well, what about the JHA? She says, well, you got the JHA. He said, yeah, I got it in the truck. And it went down and down and down. And, you know, the other things were they didn't have their equipment calibrated for carbon monoxide. We're going to talk about that. They didn't have anything. So I don't know. It seems to be a cultural thing with some painting contractors out there where people do not know what they're looking at, safety professionals. They're not sure. They're not educated. There are a lot of different exposures, and they say, well, you know what? They don't know what they're doing, so I'm going to leave them alone. And that, in all likelihood, is what happened to this person and their crew, this foreman and their crew, repeatedly. Because, one, he told me, number one, and number two, been my experience with that. Now, no one, not even a lot of certified industrial hygienists, know about this stuff. Pardon me. So, this is the context that we're doing here with this here. So, this took place here. This is from Ocean, Daily Voice, Ocean County, New Jersey. July, the author of this is, I want to give proper attribution. By the way, it's a good article. And the way this is written up, I have to compliment the guy woman, whoever did this. Hold on. Here, they did a pretty good job here. Hold on. I just lost the story here. Okay, I have to do this again. Boom. And we're going to go commercial break while I bring the story up because it just came off the screen and...
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Pozell on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
That's right. Get ready to face that harsh reality. A painting contractor. This is from worker fell 80 feet inside Jersey Shore water tower. Painting contractor fined $485K. Right, and that's a proposed penalty here, right? And the story is by Chris Fiker, and this is from the Daily Voice, Monmouth County, New Jersey. A painting contractor was facing nearly $500,000 in fines after a worker fell 80 feet to the bottom of an Ocean County water tower without safety gear, officials said. The U.S. Department of Labor cited, and this is proposed, right, penalties, for 3 willful and 19 serious violations, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration said, the news release. OSHA said the contractor did not install required safety equipment to prevent an employee from falling inside the Bayville Water Tower back in January. An employee suffered numerous injuries, and this is a quote of Paula Dixon Roderick, the OSHA director for South Jersey. An employee suffered numerous severe injuries because their employer did not make sure legally required fall protection was provided for workers climbing up and down the inside of an 8-story water tower. We intend to hold employers responsible when they fail to follow rules put in place to protect safety and health and well-being of workers. Aqua New Jersey, they're apparently the host employer, contracted a company for the maintenance and repair project. The contractor hired workers to sandblast, we don't call it that anymore, it's abrasive blast, and paint the tower's interior and exterior, along with replacing a ladder used to get to the top of the tower. Inspectors said the worker fell while climbing a maintenance tube ladder into the water tank, and the company was cited for not making sure workers had fall protection, among other things. So that's the context of this. And no, that was earlier this year that happened. And we are going to do a share screen here. And we're going to go to the actual Department of Labor documents for this. So, and again, I'm going to be small on here. Usually I do side by side, but I want to make sure that people actually see this stuff as clearly as possible. So Department of, this is the news release from the Department of Labor. This was yesterday. I missed it yesterday, otherwise I would have talked about it. Department of Labor cites South Jersey Water Tower Company, blah, 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 blah. And we're going down. Let me make sure this is on. Hold on. Yes, it's on. All right. Inspectors with OSHA determined that the company employed workers to sandblast the paint tower's interior and exterior and replace the ladder attached to the structure to access the tower's peak. OSHA learned the injured worker fell while climbing a maintenance tube ladder into the water tank. And going on, that was the same quote. It was an 8-story water tower. In addition to failing to protect employees from hazards, the company exposed employees to respiratory injuries and hearing loss while working in a permit-required confined space, fire and exposure hazards, and long-term lung damage related to unsafe levels of silica dust. So maybe they were sandblasting, right? They usually use Black Beauty on a lot of this stuff. For newer construction, they use an older material called Starolite. Starolite, which is basically sand, right? And it's within certain levels. Some of the other abrasives that are used in the industry are Garnet. That's another common one for this. And the reason why they moved to these other things is that from sand is specifically because of silica dust. Specifically, OSHA cited the company with 3 willful and 19 violations. And they have a big, long list here, as you can see. And there was a previous history with OSHA where the company was cited in 2017 for not having a rescue plan. Aqua New Jersey, which is the host employer, is a subsidiary of Aqua, a water supply company operating in 8 states. Contracted the company based in Millstone Township for the maintenance repair project. And the company has been around for 30 years and going on and on and on. Now we're going to go right to the citations here. As I said, if you are, we'll take a break at a certain point in here. And right with this, and this, we're going to probably go overtime on here. So we're, so, you know, just to, so if you're a Safety FM listener, you'll can pick this up on the podcast tomorrow. That's the Safety Wars podcast, and this is Safety Wars.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's Safety Today.
Okay, and close, and this is the usually where it goes, starts out. This is 39 pages. We'll go through most of it, I guess. Now, a lot of these may be per instance type of things and, you know, maybe repeats on here. And so what you normally get is something like this on OSHA letterhead telling you what your rights are and some other stuff in here. A little bit of background information on an informal conference and contesting citations. And this is signed by Paula Dixon Roderick, the area director. So this here is says when the inspection dates were. It was the inspection dates between 1/25/2024 and 7/16/2024. The issuance date was 7/16/2024. Where did this happen? In Bayville, New Jersey, on Route 9, 1016 Route 9. Very warm down here today. I don't know what the deal is in this studio. Okay, and formal, and it's all, here's your posting where this has to be posted. In a prominent place at or near the location of violations, or if it is not practical because of the nature of the employer's operations, where it will readily observable by all affected employees. The citation must remain posted until the violation cited has been abated, or for 3 working days, excluding weekends and 4 federal holidays, whatever is longer. They have 15 days to contest this. And then your right, and then payment rights under this as an right to contest the penalty, right, payment information, notification of corrective action, and you have a worksheet here, right? And your I'll get your to that in a minute. Employer discrimination is unlawful, so that's the whistleblower complaint that's listed in 1977, right? Employer rights and responsibilities, a notice to employees, and inspection activity data. And all of this is available on there. Even if they don't have a press release, this is available on the establishment search option under OSHA.gov. Notice employees of informal conference. So here is another one. An informal conference has been scheduled with OSHA to discuss this, blah, blah, blah. And they don't give the date for that for obvious reasons. So here's the certification of corrective action. And you have to go and every one of those things, what you did. And it has to be certified usually by the owner or a corporate officer there with this. I think they're going to have to make multiple copies of this page for this. So here we go. Again, now, I read through this prior to the air. I skimmed it. So if you're a first-time listener or you don't know how we roll here, I usually don't read these things ahead of time, because we go through these all the time and they're very numerous, and we're professional enough here on this program where we're able to, I don't want to say wing it, but we have commentary that we could always make. This is very common stuff. One thing I will say about this particular situation is that every critical point that painting companies normally fail at, the companies, I don't want to say employees, but the companies are included in here. I have to talk to my clients on this same stuff all the time and with everything else. So here we have, and let's see, this is a construction standard, right? 29 CFR 1926.95. Personal protective equipment was not of safe design and construction for the work to be performed. So the company they were wearing Tyvek 400 coveralls, DuPont, which were not designed for use in flammable atmospheres when spray painting with the Category 2 flammable paints and solvents, including but not limited to certain products here, methyl ethyl ketone, which is a thinner, right? Because what happens with paint, right, so these industrial coatings for this type of painting is an epoxy, meaning that you have a type part A, which is the hardener, and a part B, which is the actual paint, right? The stuff, right? The part B, the primer. So what happens is you mix part A and part B, you mix them together, you add methylethyl ketone, but that's not only one, it could be other types of thinners, because what happens is there you have what's called a pot life on the paint, where you have to take it, pour it, and it starts to evaporate and it starts to cure, and you have a certain amount of time to apply that paint material, that paint or that epoxy to the whatever you're doing. All right, so that's why you have the methylethyl ketone thrown in there. So this was 11,292, the fine. They did not have, so what kind of coveralls did they have? Some type of fire retardant coveralls. Now, they do make a company, and I don't have it here with me, but they do make fire retardant disposable coveralls for that. But what the thing is that those are only rated as fire retardant if you have regular NFPA 2112 fire retardant clothing underneath it. So how do you know that you have fire retardant clothing? All right, so this is Rasco FR here. That's what I have. And it says on here NFPA 2112. And also, as I went through yesterday, you have on the a tag on there, right up there. And towards the bottom, there is another. Oh, hold on. There's something in the pocket here. What could be in the pocket? I think I'm in money laundering. A buck, right? So I was money laundering. But it's in the wash. And you come, yes, a little bit of humor there for this. So you look towards the bottom, and it's something sewed in with the care of the garment, and also it's NFPA 2112. And if you go to, you have a good brand, they give you an extra button, because buttons sometimes pop off. And it says, this garment meets the requirements of NFPA 2112 standard on flame-resistant garments for protection of industrial personnel against flash fire, 2012 edition, NFPA 2113 required upper and lower body coverage. So you not only need the shirt, you also need the pants. Now, if you're working in a refining environment, that is a normal part of the uniform there. That is just the normal part of the uniform is that. That was roughly about 2010, OSHA gave a directive recommendation that became the industry standard that everybody in the oil industry, basically, except for the retail end, which doesn't make sense to me, has to wear fire retardant coveralls. So they come in multiple colors, not only dark navy blue, so you have a heat stress problem, right? And they do make short sleeve. I don't really get it, but no, I've never worked anywhere where they only did short sleeve. Now, citation one, item two, type of violations, serious, more than 25 gallons, this is 29 CFR 1926 152B1, more than 25 gallons of flammable liquids are stored in a room outside of an approved storage cabinet. So if you have 25 gallons or more, and that's not, I've been on these jobs, if it's an 80-foot tower, you're probably looking about maybe 100 gallons of paint. I don't have the exact numbers, but that's roughly what you need. So that's a lot of paint. So you have to plan for that out. Plan that out here. So that's $4,839. Citation one, item three, the transfer of flammable liquids from one container to another was done when the containers are not electrically interconnected, meaning bonded. So spray painting trailers located next to the water tower, category 2 and 3 flammable paints and solvents, including but not limited to, they list the product here, and methylethyl ketone, were poured into the plural component spray painting machine without being bonded to the machine. So, and that was on March 11th. So, way that these pumps are set up, right? I'm not familiar with this particular one necessarily, but you pour either the material is poured into the machine, right? The plural component, right? You have two sides that gets poured in there, or it gets pumped in there. depending on the configuration of this and the brand and everything else. Now, you have to bond this together. Why is that? It gets bonded together, the two containers, so you, because what happens is if you have a liquid going through a hose, right, and this whole system needs to be normally needs to be grounded, which means you're going to be, unless there's an obvious ground, you're going to be driving a copper spike into the ground, and you're going to be checking the electrical resistance in ohms with that, and you're going to be, you know, it's a big, let's just say it's a big freaking deal, all right, in the words of our president. So, no, it's a big deal. You got to have that. Why? In case you have a static electric discharge, because you have two materials going over themselves, and you actually go, that static electric discharge into a flammable material, usually not a good thing. Now, that's 11,292. Citation 1, Item 4. This is 29 CFR, 1926, 152 E3. Flammable or combustible liquids were not drawn from or transferred into vessels, containers, or tanks within buildings or outside through closed piping systems from safety cans by means of devices drawing through the top or from a container or portable tank by gravity or pumps through an approved self-closing valve. Spray painting trailer is located next to the tower, and it mentions all the things were transferred into the Wiwa plural component spray painting machine by pouring them from 5-gallon drums. All right, so guess what? They needed common thing in this industry is to dump the paint in there. Not supposed to do that. That's not the way this was set up on this machine. It's sucked in by a pump, right? So depending on your configuration and the paint you're using, right, non-flammable, it may be poured in there, but normally it's pumped in there from the pleural pump, and that was 11,292. Citation 2, Item 1. Where total length of a climb equals or exceeds 24 feet, fixed ladders were not equipped with one of the following. A ladder safety device, self-retracting lifeline and rest platforms at intervals not to exceed 150 feet or a cage or well or multiple ladder sections, each ladder section not to exceed 50 feet in length. Ladder sections were not offset from adjacent sections and landing platforms were not provided at maximum intervals of 50 feet. Pine-walled aqua tower located, blah, blah, blah. Workers were exposed to fall hazards of approximately 105 feet to ground while climbing water tower access ladder to shop last and paint the interior of the tank. There were no ladder safety devices, so they were apparently free climbing here, what they call free climbing, F-R-E-E, free climbing. There are no ladder safety devices or self-retracting lifelines for them to use. Now, this was observed on or about January 25th, so this is back in January. They have to submit an abatement document here with this by August 9th. Proposed penalty, $112,926. So this was a willful, serious violation here. So on that particular day, they had $151,641. Now, I'm going to bet money here that the compliance officer who was doing the inspection here notified them of this stuff at the time. I'm going to say that's normally, in my experience, what happens. Now, we're going to cycle through the next thing. So, with that. Now. Okay. This is for citation, for the next group of citations. The inspection was 228-2024. And this was a separate inspection. And we're not going to spare you the front matter here. The alleged, right here, boom, boom, boom. The alleged violations have been grouped because they involve similar or related hazards that may increase the potential for injuries or illnesses. When did this occur? Hold on. All right. Doesn't give a date, but I believe it's 2/28/2024 on here. And the inspection date, 2/28. So here we have citation 1, item 1A, type of violation serious. A written respiratory protection is 1910-134 standard. Now, for a review, the 1910-134 standard is what we call a horizontal standard, meaning all OSHA standards, whether you're in agriculture, marine, which is 1915, 1917, or 1918, 1926, which is construction, or 1910, which is general industry, all of those different industries have to comply with 1910-134. So 29 CFR 1910-134 C1, a written respiratory protection program that included provisions of this, right? They have the whole thing, was not established and implemented for required respirator use. Now, what happened here? The employer did not develop and implement a written respiratory protection standard program specific for the respirators used and the hazards of the work site for employees that wore respiratory protection while sandblasting, right, and spray painting the interior and exterior of the pine walled water tower, including but not limited to RPB, Nova 3 air blasting hoods, and 3M full face respirators with 6,001 organic vapor cartridges on or about 1/17/2024. So this is 1/17, this happened. Fine, $8,000 and some change. Citation 1, item 1B. The employer did not provide comprehensive, understandable training, which occurred annually and or more often if necessary. Pine Wall Aqua Tower. The employer did not provide respiratory protection training to employees required to wear Nova 3 air blasting hoods and 3M full-face respirators with 6,001 organic vapor cartridges while sandblasting and spray painting the interior and exterior of the water tower. Nothing on there. Zero. Like I said, was grouped together. Citation 1, item 1C. Selection of appropriate respirators was not based on the respiratory hazard to which the worker was exposed and user factors that affect respiratory performance and reliability. So Pine Wall Aqua Water Tower in interior section. Employees spray painted the inside of a 1.5 million gallon water tower using product that contained 5 to 10%, so this is actually in the paint, microcrystalline silica while wearing 3M full face respirators with organic vapor cartridges without HEPA filters, meaning the P100 cartridges. So you're dealing with a dust here, and they were just using organic vapor cartridges, right? An employee who spray painted the inside of Pine Wall Tower using the paint for 473 minutes on 3/11/2024. Again, OSHA came back. When you know that they're coming back, I don't know why people don't go and get their guvno together. I really don't. Right, an employee who sprayed the inside of the Pine Wall Tower, blah, 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 because these are OSHA results here, right? 8-hour time weighted average of 37.45 micrograms per meter cubed, which was 1.5 times the actual level of 25 micrograms per meter cubed. Wait until you hear the hearing protection. You're going to love this one, guys and gals. The employer did not provide and require the use of particulate cartridges. Zero. So they were just using organic vapor cartridges when they had a respirable crystalline silica hazard, right? That's problematic. Citation 1, item 1D was oil lubricated 1910-134. Oil lubricated compressor used to supply breathing air did not have a high temperature or carbon monoxide alarm or both. That's a critical one. Just because you have a supplied air respirator, in this case a blast hood, you must have a calibrated carbon monoxide monitor on that. Why is that? You may say, well, Jim, we're using a certain brand that has filters in it, blah, blah, blah. Why do we need to use a carbon monoxide monitor? It's because the carbon monoxide monitor cannot be filtered out, right? Maybe there's some exotic filter, but typically that's not filtered out. So would they put in a inline carbon monoxide monitor in there? Just something in there, right? So if only a high temperature alarm is used, the air supply should be monitored to prevent carbon monoxide and breathing. This is $0. Now, this is what my problem is with some of the older technology here, is that people can switch these things off and then people get carbon monoxide poisoning. Jimmy, what do you mean carbon monoxide poisoning? What kind of, they're using gas-powered compressors or diesel-powered compressors, or somebody pulls up to the air intake of the compressor. If you're not using those, you're using electric, and they leave their truck running. Then you get carbon monoxide in there. And if it's breathing air, not to exceed 10 parts per million, which is well below the PEL. Citation 1, item 2A. Now, I went through this with a client today, right? The employer did not compile a list of hazardous chemicals known to be present using a product identifier that was referenced on the appropriate safety data sheet. The written hazard communication program did not include a list of hazardous chemicals used by employees when sandblasting and spray painting the interior and exterior of the water tower, including but not limited to a whole bunch of different chemicals here, and methyl ethyl ketone and xylene. Fine, $8,067. Citation 1, item 2B, type of violation. Serious, the employer did not include respirable crystalline silica in the program established to comply with Hazard Communication Standard 29 CFR 1910-1200. Again, that is it. They were not using, they did not incorporate crystalline silica into the written program. Provide training to employees on hazards of crystalline silica. Employees spray painted the interior and exterior of the pine wall water tower using something with crystalline silica. The employer is required to submit abatement certification for this item. Failure to comply will result in an additional penalty of $1,000, right? Zero. So part A and part B, you mix them together, you get epoxy. Employees are not provided. This is, again, 1910-1200. No training on hazardous materials, $8,067. Citation 1, item 4, where, now this is where it gets really interesting here. Now, on the general industry side, that's the 1910 side, noise monitoring is very, very comprehensive, and the whole standard, very comprehensive. With the, on the construction end, it's not very comprehensive. And you're going to see here what they didn't do. This is pretty much it here. And OSHA again did, and this is 11,292. OSHA did an in-depth type of situation here. So 1926.52B, where employees are subject to sound levels exceeding those listed in Table D2 of this section, feasible, administrative, or engineering controls were not utilized. When such controls failed to reduce sound level within the levels of the table, PPE, as required in subpart E, was not provided and used to reduce sound levels within the levels of this table. So they want the hierarchy of controls first, and then new hearing protection second, which is the way it should be. You're not going to eliminate the sound. Exactly how loud is this? Really freaking loud. It's like sand sitting next to a jet engine. So pine wall aqua tower inside and outside tarpaulin containment area. The employee who was sandblasting was exposed to continuous noise levels in excess of the allowable 8-hour time-weighted average sound level. The employee's dose level, was 1,518.7% of the permissible level of 90 decibels and was equivalent to approximately 109.6 decibels. The sampling was performed for 480 minutes during one shift on 4/9/24. The employer did not utilize any administrative or engineering controls to reduce noise. What would be an administrative control would most likely be rotating employees. Here, the employer did not provide PPE that had a noise reduction rating of 26. The PPE was not capable of reducing the employee's noise exposure to below the limits. The employee who was sampled and was exposed pine wall water tower inside and outside the power pole and containment area. The employee who was sandblasted and was exposed to continuous noise levels in excess of the allowable 8-hour time-weighted average sound level, right, PEL. The employee's dosimeter level was 2,786.3% above the permissible exposure level and was the equivalent to approximately 114 decibels. The employer provided the PPE that had a noise reduction rating of 22. Right, I think I misspoke on the previous one. This PPE was not capable of reducing employees' noise exposure to below the limits in Table D2. This is now, in their defense, I don't think any contractor would ever do this here, except for the ones I work with, right, would be able to remedy this. The employee who was sandblasted was exposed to continuous noise levels. And this was 3,674.7% of the PEL and was equivalent to approximately 115.9. And again, noise reduction rating of 26. So unless that these are fitted, right, you have to use a correction factor on here, which is -7. From this and divided by, and that number divided by 2, and that gives you the corrected noise reduction rating for this type of equipment, right? So they put in a safety margin because these things don't fit everybody the same. What's some of the other options? Double hearing protection, and that's usually above 104, 105 decibels. They recommend double hearing protection depending on what you're dealing with and what kind of equipment you have. No rotating employees, putting some type of insulation around the abrasive blasting equipment. Anything like that is what they're going to recommend, right? So 1926-1153, the employer did not assess the exposure of each employee who was or may be reasonably expected to be exposed to respirable crystalline silica at or above the action level. That's 11,292 with that. So OSHA did the sampling, and an employee who sprayed the interior of the tower using the paint for 473 minutes on 3/11/24 was exposed to airborne concentration of silica at an 8-hour time-weighted average of 37.45 micrograms per meter cubed, which was 1.5 times the action level of 25 micrograms. The exposure control plan did not contain a description of tasks in the workplace, and that involved exposure to respirable crystalline silica. The exposure control plan did not include the use of Part A of the epoxy that contained 5 to 10% microcrystalline silica and was used to spray paint the interior, right? $8,067. Citation 1, Item 8. Here. The exposure control, 1926-1153, the exposure control plan did not contain a description of the engineering controls, work practice, and respiratory protection with this. Again, why wouldn't they? They're using the wrong cartridges. $8,067. Citation 1, Item 8. The employer did not provide testing and monitoring equipment needed to comply with paragraph E. Right, so they did not provide equipment to continuously test and monitor the atmospheric conditions, including but not limited to oxygen and hydrogen sulfide levels within the pine wall tower. So this is 1926-1200. That is 1204. That is the construction confined space entry standard, 11,292. Citation 1, Item 9, type of violation serious. Lighting equipment there. That is out of the confined space entry thing. The employer did not provide lighting equipment approved for ignitable or combustible properties of the specified gas, vapor, dust, or fiber that were present, that was sufficient to enable employees to see well enough. So no intrinsically safe lighting, 11,292. Citation item 10, before entry was authorized, the employer did not document the completion of measures required by the confined space entry standard of the standard by preparing an entry permit, 11,292. Citation 1, item 11, another confined space entry standard violation here, did not provide training entering it. Confined space entry training, another 11,292. Citation 2, item 1, this was a willful serious. This is off a permit on the confined space entry standard in construction. The employer did not develop and implement the means, procedures, and practices necessary for safe entry into the 1.5 million gallon pine walled water tower for employees conducting sandblasting and spray painting, including but not limited to identifying acceptable air and quality entry conditions, frequency of air monitoring when in the space, procedures to prevent slip, trips, and fall hazards, and identifying conditions when evacuation was necessary, equipment needed during the entry and rescue procedures on or about 1/17/24. That was willful. That is 112,926. Citation 2, item 2. Type of violation, willful serious. Again, permit required confined space, 1926-1204. Here, the employer did not develop and implement procedures for summoning rescue and emergency services, including procedures for summoning emergency assistance in the event of a failed non-entry rescue, for rescuing entrants from permit spaces, and for providing necessary emergency services to rescued employees, and for preventing unauthorized personnel from attempting a rescue. Again, nothing included there, $112,926 for a grand total of $333,939 on that one. I'm going to do the outro for this, and I will come back with some additional commentary on this.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Okay, I am back here. Took a little break there. Some additional commentary. What's the PEL for respirable crystalline silica? This is out of 1910-1053C. Permissible exposure limit is 50 micrograms. So the action level is at 25 micrograms per meter cubed. And what that is the... At 25, you have to start sampling, you have to do an evaluation, and there's a whole bunch of other requirements. So at 50 micrograms per meter cube, which is not a lot, that's when you have to start with controls, respiratory protection, and everything else. I didn't want to go too deep in here, but there is a table in here. Hold on. Oh, this is 1910, not 1926. So that's why it's not a table. The 1926 standard. Has a table in there that essentially, right? This is what happens when you do it on the fly. That tells you what you are doing, what you are doing, and what kind of protection do you need? Let me get back to that. Let's go down to 1926. Bear with me here, and. Sorry about that guy, folks. Of course, you can find it all the time. So 1926, 1153. Let's do a share screen on that. Screen. So here we have this, right? So the PEL is still 50, but here we have table one, specified exposure control methods when working with material containing respirable crystalline silica. They have different types of things. So if you're doing stationary masonry saw, for example, use saw equipped with integrated water delivery system on here, right? Operate and maintain tool in accordance and it no app. Right, no respiratory protection. As long as you have water and it's less than 4 hours, right, or greater than 4 hours, right, with that. But going on, you have everything here. So let's go down here to see if they have abrasive blasting. They do not have that abrasive blasting on here specifically with this, but in the table, but they do have it other things. So, you know, something to consider here. We specialize with industrial painters, right? The other thing is this, with the pour pump, depends on how it's set up, but whatever you're doing, you have to minimize, right? When you're transferring materials from one container to another, you have to consider the possibility for a static electric discharge into flammable material, which may ignite. You got to follow the manufacturer's recommendations of what you're supposed to do. I suspect that most of this will be negotiated downward at a certain point with this. That's what my suspicion is. And the thing is, OSHA shows up job site, your work area, what have you, you need to have a plan in place. What are your procedures in place for when a regulator shows up, when OSHA shows up, when, if you're dealing with EPA or DEP or any of those other alphabet soup things, what are your procedures? Obviously, they didn't have, whatever procedures they have might not have been adequate, because OSHA showed up, did air monitoring, did air sampling, and everything else later on, and they didn't have anything in there. When OSHA showed up, first of all, you didn't have the right equipment in there, allegedly, and the person got killed. One fatality. Usually, you just don't continue to work, right? And you got to make your notifications. You want to get someone out there who's qualified. That could be someone from my team, 845-269-5772. Or somebody internal to go out there and who knows what they're doing with this stuff. Because now you're in the big leagues. When you start to get willful and serious and everything else, you probably don't want, right, just someone like me, you're probably going to need an attorney to manage this. We work with attorneys that manage these situations all the time, so give us a call on that. But you have to have your stuff together. So one other thing, what could you do? OSHA shows up to the job site. What do? You tell them to go bleep off, or do you tell them, hey, let me get my boss here? Can you wait? Usually they'll do it. Not all the time, but sometimes they'll do it. You have a fatality on site. I can guarantee you, you're going to be having an OSHA inspector, if not there that day, the next day. And for a catastrophic injury of some sort, they're usually there within 72 hours. I've sat in my pickup truck watching Star Trek episodes for 3 days waiting for OSHA to show up on some of these jobs. And that's assuming that they're in compliance. If they're not in compliance, I make believe I'm OSHA and I go through and we see what's there, what they're likely going to find. So at least when OSHA shows up, hey, we're working on that. We've identified that. This is our abatement thing. And maybe they'll say, well, it's being abated in the field or it was abated in the field, blah, 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 when we were there. And then, you know, things look better. You're making an effort. You're showing something with that. No, and that's what you need to do. You have to manage this stuff. You have to have plans ahead of time. Don't think, no, that you're going to, eventually you're going to, someone's going to get hurt or whatever. Don't think that, hey, nothing will ever happen and OSHA will never show up, period, with anything. No, will never show up. That's not a reasonable thing to do. Now, we do OSHA 10-hour construction outreach training, 30-hour construction outreach training. We also do authorized and competent person fall protection training, right, up to the latest ANSI standards. We do all this training for you. We've done work with industrial painters. We know what's going on with them. We have a whole staff of people to deal with these situations. So give us a call, 845-269-5772, like it says on the bottom of your screen, or you can contact me at jim@safetywars.com. We'll take care of you with this. That's all I have for tonight. You already got the outro with the for the Safety FM folks, and we'll be posting this later tonight. Right? This is posted on our YouTube and everything else, and I will see you on our next Safety Wars, right? Hopefully we'll be here tomorrow. We'll see how that goes. We do have some meetings on some other projects that we're working on that we can only meet the client on Friday night, so or Friday afternoon. So I'm hoping to be here. Might not happen. So for Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel. I hope to see you out there next on the next program. And thanks a lot for watching or listening or whatever else you're doing.